Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. It's a pleasure to be here. And we finally have our audio cable that allows me to control a Twitter space from my real phone. So we are able to be simultaneously on Twitter space. I'm not super satisfied about the audio quality, but I'll be working on this in the next few days, hopefully, and will be better and better every day. That's the goal. And we are joined by Hitch Slap, who is so often there. He's been always there. He hasn't missed a show where I do it on Twitter space. Hitch Slap, I'm so glad that we can speak again with this new cable.
Yes, thank you, JF. It's been a while. It's been a few days. People have been messaging me saying that they enjoy your shows, they enjoy me being on here. When is it happening again, etc. And I mentioned that you are a perfectionist. You're currently getting high-quality cables, and you're very sagacious. You're going to sort out the sound, and we'll be back. So, great to be back on Twitter Spaces. People have been wanting to hear your show on here as well, and sometimes it's more convenient for them, I guess. But, yeah, we can hear you loud and clear.
And I'm being convinced that there is a problem with Twitter and how it handles the audio, because I record my voice on the phone on a separate program, and I have my superb studio sound. But when I get into Twitter, it gets this canny aspect that I don't really like. So there's still improvements to do on the side of Elon Musk, but hopefully we'll get there.
Yeah, just one thing I've heard people say, this is not my area of expertise, but some people, they host kind of singing spaces where different people can sing. And the people that know a lot about audio have mentioned something about limitations of Twitter. I don't know if Twitter limits it deliberately or accidentally, but you don't get very good sound on Twitter, either by singing, even people with very good microphones, they've kind of said there's some kind of limitation. So,
yeah, I agree. I conclude that the bug is in the Twitter code. I hope that Elon Musk works on this. Garfield has sent a super chat on Odyssey. Thank you so much. He says, "Hi, JF. I've heard that you were supposed to debate a Russian libertarian about a year ago before the Russo-Ukrainian war broke out. Could you confirm that information and tell what the debate topic and the position you wanted to defend were? Thank you." Yeah, there had been talks about this. It was a guy who was on the Ukrainian side, I believe, and who had been the victim of an assassination attempt. And he's a libertarian, like Russian, that is kind of anti-Russian in this war. And he was on the Ukrainian side.
Oh, we seem to have lost. Oh, we lost you for a moment there, JFE, there.
Okay. And now am I back?
Yes, you're back. Perfect.
All right. Keep warning me whenever that happens. We want to figure it out because tonight is a relaxed show. So it's the perfect time to know, are there bugs? Are there perhaps Wi-Fi slowdowns? Because I'm on Wi-Fi in the end on this phone. So that it may be due to this. So yes, there was this guy. I don't even remember his name, but he never went into it. And I had never had confirmation that he would debate me, but there were people in his entourage who wanted him to debate me. But it never resolved into something, and it never happened. The positions would have been probably that he would have taken a pro-Ukraine side, and I would have taken a kind of understanding of the Russian side approach to it. Based Saxons was saying, "This ominous show title makes me feel as if there is some big happening that I'm completely unaware of. Oh, it's about Weinstein Gate. Watching the video now, this should be good." Yeah, I mean, this is what I wanted to talk about, because first, there's really zero news. The news sucked today. And I wanted to talk about the Weinstein Gate second video that I published this morning. I had published the first Weinstein Gate video 2 weeks ago on a Monday morning, and it had memed a lot. And I discovered the technique that, yeah, people at 8 a.m. Eastern time, 9 a.m. Eastern time, they wake up, they get on Twitter, and it starts the conversation. So I've done it again this morning, and my thoughts, I'm kind of wrecked. I'm wrecked by how far I had to go to get the truth in this case. And we still don't have the truth. We still don't have a full engagement of Brett on these questions, but I'm shocked because I've never seen a case of plagiarism where the person is not fully straightforward. So if you accuse me of plagiarism, within a few hours of me just doing full research, and I'm going to be, oh, shit, how many points have you got against me? 6? Oh, let me address them all. But that's not what we got with Brett. And I've been questioning myself throughout this whole episode the last 2 weeks, and I've been asking myself, is it the right technique to go public like this? Because a lot of people were saying, were sending insults to me and were saying, have you contacted him in private? And I'm resolved to, I have come to the conclusion that everything I done was correct and it was the right way to go. First, why go public instead of contacting the person? Because you want to create a market for plagiarism researcher. I have to eat. I have to have a job. I have to attract people to my show and get them interested in these subjects. And I would lose my job. I would not have a way to live if every time I discover something, I give it to the person who's most interested in hiding it or most interested in neutralizing it. So I think it's fine to go public with details without approaching the person, simply because, first, we are in the age of instant communication. Like, if I make an accusation that is unfounded, the person can respond immediately. And that's not what we had with Brett. We've had incomplete denials for 2 weeks now. And this is what I realized while I was editing the second video, where the second video looks very much like the first. It's just the overarching theory of the plagiarism has switched. At first, I thought that I was included in the plagiarism. That belief changed very quick when the Brett fans sent me evidence that... it's not that it changed. It's not even that it changed. It's just that the Brett fans have sent me evidence that reasonably gives an out to Brett on this. So I'm fine. I will give any reasonable out to Brett on this. So, okay, that's fine. Now, the overarching theory of the plagiarism is simply, it's not my retweet that was plagiarized, it's the tweet that I was retweeting. And it boils down to the same arguments. It's just more focused on the data itself, but it's always been the mathematical numbers that are super hard to explain. Like, I'm talking to this guy, Pathogenetics. This is the guy who's now the target, who I believe is the target of the plagiarism. I'm talking to this guy. There's clearly uniqueness in the way he came with these numbers. What I'm saying is, give 100 other scientists the same data, they're not going to attain the same numbers. They're not going to round it the same. They're not going to count the things the same way. They're not going to focus on the same genes. They're not, you could, like, numbers like 80 and 1% could have well been 60 and 5%. If you looked at it a different way, if you counted things differently, if you rounded things differently. So I'm like, okay, the fact that there is a similarity of three numbers shows me that the form and the uniqueness of this work of mathematics, of just data analysis, has been plagiarized. That is still my conviction. But most importantly, what I realize is that by going public with the story at first, even if it was imperfect, I gained an advantage. Again, an advantage that almost no plagiarist researcher ever benefit from. The advantage of forcing a first public response. The problem is, when you get to someone who may be committing plagiarism, and you talk to them privately, they're gonna find the best way to get out of it, and they're not going to be committed to anything they say, because it's not going to be verifiable in public. So it's easy for someone to squeeze themselves out of a plagiarist accusation that has not been made public. Now, when you make it public, what happened is that it was kind of a test for Brett, if you will, what I did 2 weeks ago. I didn't intend it as a test, but it turned out to be a test. Turned out to be a test of, okay, maybe there's some similarities in my list of 5, 6 that there's explanations for. But let's see what he says about it. Let's see which ones he's very skilled at fighting back on and which one he's kind of leaving on the side. And what I discover is that it provides a lot of evidence, the silence of the other side. The fact that Brett and his fans so harshly pursued my first 4 claims of similarity and successfully undermined them made me realize just how little they had on explaining the data that Brett is still using on stream. And so it's like, okay, you got very good arguments for this. I'm putting them on the side. Now, what about this? And we have a total absence of response. We have literally Brett going on his stream and calling my fans Nazis. That is what we have. Now, that is evidence. And that is evidence. I didn't mention this thing in the video because I thought, let's be above this. But to me, that is evidence of a level of defensiveness that would be hard to explain if Brett had a good explanation for the use of these numbers. And on top of it, I started noticing so many things as I was doing the video. I started noticing, well, we don't have a denial of this. We don't have... So Brett has been straightforward on denying, for example, that he saw my tweet. Oh, good. He didn't see my tweet. Let's take this for granted. Now, you know, an everyday person will believe this or not believe this, but I'm a plagiarist researcher. I'm a plagiarism researcher. I have to believe the other side. All right, you didn't see my tweet. But did you see other tweets? And then I started realizing, wow, having had a first public response from Brett gives me not just what he said, but what he didn't say. And it struck me that this is enormous amounts of information. Combined with the similarities, it struck me that in the silences and the partial denials of Brett probably lies the truth to be discovered. So that's what I did in my second video. I traced the truth from what Brett wasn't denying. Not denying this, you're not denying that you were, and let's leave Brett aside here, let's say that I'm a police investigator. You won't deny that you were at the bar yesterday. You deny that you were eating there, but you don't deny that you were drinking there. You deny that you were there at 7, but you don't deny that you were there at 8. Therefore, you were there at 8, you were drinking, and you killed that person. See? From the contrast between the denials and the non-denials, there is a massive amount of information that can guide us toward the truth. Now, I'm just stunned that we had to get there. I'm just stunned that there is even a parallel to be made with a police investigation on this, because it shouldn't be. The way I know about plagiarism and intellectual work is you always expect the intellectual to be overly straightforward. If you list 5 things that you think they did wrong, they will come back with a point for each of the 5 things. And if the 5th happens to be something wrong, they will say, I'm sorry about this one, that was wrong. But we didn't get this from Brett. We never got an explanation for the mathematical similarities between his sentences and the tweet of pathogenetics. Now, what I find fascinating is that Pathogenetics himself, who is now mostly concerned by this case of plagiarism, is accepted to play the game, basically. And I don't have personal insight into whether he believes in my videos, whether... I don't know. What I know is that he's liking, he's liking the interactions on Twitter, and so he's seeing everything that's happening. And he's the one who came out on his own and said on Twitter, look, I would like to be attributed there. Well, he didn't say I would like, but he said, I have learned that I'm not being attributed for my Twitter work. So it's very interesting what's happening. It's so complex and so such a teachable moment. So here's the image of the video. It's a video that really resembles the first, other than some changes of the overarching theory. It's a 14-minute video. I have done several changes to the way I phrase things according to my interaction with Brett, according to some of the things that were poorly done in the first. So Brett didn't like that I said, "I'm certain that you've committed plagiarism." All right, well, let's remove the certain. I'm still certain personally, but I don't... One moment. I still feel very certain that there is plagiarism one way or another here happening. Often you don't know the sense of the plagiarism. Sometimes you will start an investigation and you're going to get... You think that this guy plagiarized this guy, but it's the reverse thing. Totally can happen. Totally can happen. But yeah, so he didn't like the word certain. All right, let's be more liberal about it. So I said Brett should give the source for Pathogenetics or whoever else he's quoting. I'm sure that Brett isn't counting those mutations himself. So let's talk about who it is. I'm totally open to the idea that there's a mysterious man out there who happened to have done the exact same calculations as Pathogenetics and had the same ideas and the same roundings and the same sources. But let's hear about it. Why don't we have a response to this question, which is fundamental to this plagiarism case from the beginning? That is so frustrating to me. And what I'm thinking is it possible that Brett felt so insulted and attacked by the wide array of similarities that I have identified first that he didn't want to give any inch to this because he was scared that, oh, if I give number five, they're going to think that all is true. But I don't think he went the right way about it. Keeping the plagiarism researcher in the dark on, do you even have a response to five? Are you hiding your response to five? I mean, it makes you paranoid. I've become paranoid. I'm like, is Brett hiding his response to my argument because he wants me to induce me in error? He wants me to create a video and then bash it or just blow it away with this perfect argument? Or I don't know where we're at. I decided that my technique, as I've applied it, is a technique that maximizes finding the truth at the end. We're going to find the truth at the end on what is this... What led to this plagiarism case? And I'm wondering about the state of thoughts of Brett into how much he does, maybe he doesn't respect the Twitter people. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he finds them not trustable enough. Maybe he's scared of quoting someone who he doesn't know from any other thing than the numbers he's taking from them. See, that scares me. The possibility that Brett may be an elitist and that he's like, oh, this guy, I'm going to take his numbers, but I don't know who he is. And he's got a lizard face on his Twitter account. Therefore, I'm not going to quote him because who knows, maybe he's crazy. That scares me for the future of science, that we could have some people thinking like this. And I want Brett to come out with an explanation that abolishes this possibility, but I'm not satisfied by what we've been given up to now. So I will pursue the truth with this, and we're going to find it. No matter the amount of egos broken along the way, I don't care. Hitchslap, can you update me on the state of the Twitter space? Because I still don't have a holder for my phone. How are we doing there?
Oh, gotcha. Yes, we're doing well. There's people in the listeners. When it first started, I got them all to give a thumbs up so everyone can hear you clearly. Also let people know in the listeners, if you have anything you want to ask JF, let us know, send a request, then we'll bring up a couple of people as we can go. So, yeah, we can hear you perfectly. And I completely agree with what you're saying about Brett. I used to think, surely people in high power positions, they wouldn't plagiarize. But the more time passes, the more examples I see, the more I'm not surprised that kind of I think anybody could do that. So, I totally agree.
Absolutely. Forex Shark asks an interesting question on Discord. He says, how far down the chain is reasonable to give attribution? If I use Party A's data that they derived from calculations which contain data sourced from Party B, and Party A credits Party B in their work, of course you credit A and direct people to this work, which they can then read. Those are interesting questions. There is not a single answer to this, because ultimately all of science is all built on previous stuff. But there are clear intuitions that you can follow. Like, if I can trace the source from what you say, that's the source you should cite. Like, if I can find the numbers, that's a good sign. If I can find the numbers of that source, that would be the source you have to cite. If I can retrace the IDs that are most close to what you say, the proper source would be the one that has the IDs shaped in the closest possible way to what you're saying. So it's a very complex question, but it's not always the case that citing the most recent statement on this basically gives you a kind of blank card, a white card to ignore the rest of science that led to this. Especially if you're going to cite the numbers of an original source, it is not sufficient to cite a secondary source that would then have made some thinking about these numbers. See, this is where I take issue with Chris Martinson as a quotation. And let me tell you, one thing I discovered in the community today, there's a bunch of people out there, they've been frustrated at Brett Weinstein for more than a year, because they are precisely in the community around, the pathogenetics type of guy, not pathogenetics himself, but there are people who have been working their ass off on an everyday basis to create Twitter content around lab leaks, hypotheses, genetic analysis. And they were telling me, there was one guy telling me today on Twitter, I'm not surprised of what you're identifying there. We've been knowing this for months and years, because we've been seeing 5 or 6 Twitter accounts doing all of the work on these theories, and just to see them getting ripped off by everyone else who didn't quote them. So I think I'm hitting on something here that I didn't know it was that big. I didn't know that I was hitting on something that other people have been like, we take issue with this. It's been happening to us. And they were like, thank you, JF. you're taking on a fight that we didn't maybe have the energy or courage to take, but we've been annoyed at it for so long. Thomas O'Ward was saying on the chat, ooh, sounds like Weinstein has the upper hand in this relationship. I'm reminded of the famous scene from Mad Men's statement, I feel bad for you. Response, I don't think about you at all. Oh, well, that is always the case when you're talking about a creator with a higher number of audiences. It's always... I've been in this position since the beginning of my career, and I'll probably be forever, where I'm punching up, But that is the nature, that is how you survive as a low life form of the internet, a bottom feeder. I've always defined myself as a bottom feeder of the internet. I started this whole thing by going on the Drunken Peasants, the biggest show of the internet at that time, and then I got a co-host position at Warski Live, the biggest show of the internet at that time. I've always been draining from other communities that already pre-exist and are bigger than mine. Go Away says 63%. Oh, that's unrelated to the subject of today. All right, I've read through and not worth citing. So yes, those are my thoughts on today. I am super excited at resolving this case. I would like to see a resolution this week where Brett comes with an explanation, because now I've phrased the whole case in a way that I don't think he can take issue with. I'm not bringing in side similarities that were shown to be irrelevant. I'm really showing him what's left, and I'm like, that's enough. That's enough. And you should address this. Thomas O'Ward was saying before that, he said, does this mean JF has finally given up on his dream discussing TRP with Weinstein? Maybe now is the time to pursue a discussion with truly interesting minds, James Watson, James Thor, or Ted Kay. Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. It's complicated. I don't know how Brett will feel at the end of it all. Personally, I feel super cheered up. I don't know if he's going to feel the same. But this doesn't change my willingness to discuss TRP with anyone. But will Brett consider that I've burned bridges by pursuing this case? Maybe he will. But yeah, I've kind of decided in my head that it doesn't matter anymore. I'm really seeing my career, like, I'm thinking of the next 20 years, and I don't see any difference. I don't see any difference in the outcome, whether Brett reads or doesn't read TRP. So it's not that I wouldn't do it. We should definitely encourage anyone to be in contact with this theory. But it doesn't matter to me anymore. Thomas O'Ward was saying, read my previous comment, JF. You know I've been making this a crusade for years since TRP came out. James Watson is the guy. Well, I wrote to James Watson once and to an email that was reported to be his. I never had an answer, so I don't know. I don't know how we're supposed to contact him. He's an old man. Didn't he die? Or I don't know, but he's a very old man. I think last news I had, he was being cared for by loved ones. And I don't think he was able to do much things. Probably not much thinking. Tillman says, JF, Brett hasn't clarified his numbers yet. That is the stunning realization that leads me to tonight's title. Some thoughts on today, because holy shit. What can be happening for us not to get an answer to this? Where did you get three numbers? I think you could come and see me and ask me, JF, 6 years ago you made this show. Where did you get this number? I think I could be able to tell you 6 years ago. How is it possible that we don't have an answer within something that happened 2 weeks ago? It seems that memory should be there here. Well, yeah, that's it. So go ahead and promote Weinstein Gate, the original video that I've published. We've got good engagement, already more than 4,000 views, and I haven't refreshed. It's probably more than this. We need to solve the question of original work on Twitter and never underestimate the historical importance of what is happening here. The future literally stands on Brett's shoulders here. And we could have a future in which there's no science being done on Twitter and people aren't sharing willfully their discoveries, or we can have a future in which that happens. We can have a future in which people like pathogenetics, little geeks of the internet, they get to an Omicron answer about it being a lab leak a year before anyone else thinks, oh my God, these geeks must be rewarded. We should pay them harems. I shouldn't be out there begging for Brett Weinstein to quote these people. we should be collectively pooling our money and paying prostitutes to pathogenetics to suck his dick so that he keeps doing good science. That's what should happen. But no, I'm here in fucking nightmare land having to try to convince someone who said he was once plagiarized and understands the thing and claims he was plagiarized in a similar context, which is he shared his ideas in an informal setting and they got stolen by a scientist who used it on a PowerPoint. If you're offended by this, shouldn't you be offended by the same thing happening from a Twitter tweet to a YouTube video? The future relies on this. Ariel Suarez says pathogenetics or pathogeneticist. It's a pathogenetics, that is his name. You'll see I've tagged him on the original video. Thomas O'Ward says a discussion with James Watson would be the gold encrusted crown on JF's online career. Don't give up on all that glory, JF. No, it would be fun because James Watson is a man. First, he was there. He was there thinking, and I quote him in my book. In fact, I think I quote him as one of the guys around the RNA world theory. I don't remember. Is James Watson directly involved in that trio that came up with the RNA theory? I know it's in my book. But somehow, I don't remember the three names. The end of RNA. It's not in the end of RNA. Is it earlier in the book that I mentioned? I don't know if there are people at home who have their copy of The Revolutionary Phenotype, but where do I cite three guys? Okay, there it is, chapter 4, first paragraph. Carl Woese, Francis Crick, and Leslie Orgel. Okay, so it wasn't Watson that was in this trio, but he certainly was around back in those days, and he followed those developments around the RNA world theory, and I'm sure he was very close to these three guys. But he discovered the DNA, the helix, and the whole mathematical description, basically. Yes, and this guy was an important piece in developing this conception of the dogma of biology from DNA to proteins. And the fact that you can think of it in reverse and reach something like the revolutionary phenotype, an inversion of everything he's been doing and thinking about, that is very interesting. I would love to talk to him. I think that one of the minds who could most appreciate how important it is to think of the dogma of biology in reverse, it's him. It's him who would fully appreciate, oh my God. So I saw the world from one side. This guy sees it from below. That is what's meant by the theory of phenotypic revolutions. Thomas O'Ward says the structure of DNA, the mapping of the human genome, there is no one better suited to a discussion. Ruffman says he has already asked David Icke, Alex Jones, Bill Gates, and Andrew Tate to read TRP. I love that Andrew Tate is in there. Oh, well, don't worry, guys. I'm so happy that I have fans who take this to heart. But don't worry, the truth lays itself, and there is just no way that the TRP doesn't make its way for total acceptance by everyone eventually. Philosoraptor has sent a super chat. He says, hey, JF, sorry if you addressed it already. What are your thoughts on HARP generating earthquakes? I've never been researching this, so I don't know about it at all. No idea. Is it a conspiracy theory? Is it something that's certain and that we know? I have no clue. Absolutely no clue. I guess in principle, I can see this, and I don't see how it wouldn't be possible. I don't see how that would be a problem. But you have to have enough force to induce this, and I don't know that anything. Although in principle, I think you should be able to cause an earthquake. In practice, is there anything that can generate something strong enough for it to matter to the Earth? I don't know. All right, so what did we have in the news? The latest on the unidentified objects shut down over North America. Pentagon memo says object shut down over Canada was a small metallic balloon. We don't really know. We don't really understand what we're shooting. And they say that two of the balloons shot had a payload below it. But a payload is not necessarily weaponry. It's not necessarily a missile. They were just carrying something. Just carrying something. Blood and Biden says asking Andy Warski to read TRP is probably pointless after getting his brain scrambled in the boxing ring. Or you think that Warski's brain being scrambled dates from the recent loss in boxing? I don't think so, my friend. DeSantis announces legislation to ban social credit scores, woke ESG financial scam. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Monday announced a proposal to eliminate ESG banking and prohibit the financial sector from implementing social credit scores that would otherwise prevent Floridians from obtaining loans, lines of credits, and opening bank accounts. The war against ESG is very late. I'm for it. I'm totally for abolishing this because it's a form of communism in which incompetent companies make it through because they're in the system of ESG and they have a very good ESG score. So they end up being included and you end up having investments that are no more directed at viability. They are directed at leftist values, basically. And so I'm all for the war against ESG, but it should have been undertaken at the inception of those ideas because it's a machine now that is that could probably sustain itself just from the retirement payments in leftist states and all of the ways in which money is basically unintelligently directed toward the financial sector. There's so much source for it at this point. I don't know that Republican states can even change the state of affair here. Thomas O'Ward says, is there any way to communicate through the mail with Ted Kay or conduct a jailhouse interview? Not a biologist like Watson, but a genius at discussing the societal effects of TRP. I don't know how. I think it's possible to get Ted Kay's address, and it's possible to send him mail. But I think wasn't he headed toward death? I don't know. I think that he was saying that he was soon going to die. So I don't know. Tetrips captain says, how many more years for Warski to acquire AIDS? We gotta be getting pretty close. Well, I said 7 years in 2017 or 2018. So that would send us to 2025, approximately. Speaker's Corner says, could you give TRP as a gift to a layman with no previous knowledge of evolutionary biology and have them get something out of it? Absolutely. I've designed the book so that you don't have to read anything before it. Now, you may appreciate, if you can read The Selfish Gene before it, you may appreciate better how important the discovery is and stuff like this. But in principle, if you are... It's not a super technical book. It's really a book in images and it's a book in metaphors and special words that I invent just for a purpose and then I let them go. So it's a book of creation and ideas and someone can totally approach this without previous knowledge. And I have a very long introduction. Basically, half of the book is an introduction. it's the first six chapters that are basically nothing new. It's not innovation on my part. It's really just a review of questions that have existed in biology forever. I would say that were raised by Richard Dawkins' formulation of the selfish gene in a way. Get the hell out of here. Ohio's apocalyptic chemical disaster rages on. During a press conference, the NTSB referenced a video from Salem, Ohio, about 20 miles from East Palestine, which shows sparks and flames emitting from beneath the train. The apparent structural issue with the train was captured on a security camera when it was traveling through Salem. According to Michael Graham, board member on the NTSB, two videos they had obtained were indicative of mechanical issues attributed to the rail car axles. So we can see on the video that there were sparks. I think it's not there anymore, but yes, it's right there. You can see there were sparks under the train. And so it looks like there was massive amounts of friction happening under the train, and so much so that it creates heat enough to light up a fire. That is probably what happened. Or there was mechanical damage and some leak, and then you have an initiation of an explosive reaction. Thomas Howard says, my point is there are so many more worthy people to have a discussion with other than Weinstein. Not worth 2 seconds of concerned thought. I consider that I would discuss TRP with anyone, and anyone would have something to gain from reading it. So that's my position, but I understand what you mean. You think, Ted K is an interesting guy. You know, he saw these things very much in advance. But he's too resistant to it. I think that Ted K puts too much in the same basket, you know? He's kind of created a category called technology in his head, and he rejected it all, and I don't think that all of technology should be rejected. Tillman says, JF, how do you think a Christian take TRP? A Christian take on the revolutionary phenotype? The Christians tend to like the revolutionary phenotype, I think. I've seen readers that were Christian, and they enjoy the fact that it's not a militant atheist book, you know. It's not about this. It's about the theory of biology, and you can think whatever you want about a God being above the universe, but here's what had to happen on Earth. And it had to happen whether you want to think that the universe is directed by some god or not. Dinologovich says, Dawkins is still in therapy after the Jordan Peterson interview. I've watched it. What was it about where Jordan Peterson just got... I think Richard Dawkins at some point tries to poke Jordan Peterson, because Jordan Peterson starts talking about having visions about DNA. And he's like, I was seeing the whole spiral, and I was feeling the DNA. And it's like, bro, you're talking to a man who has properly conceptualized DNA. And it's so much more fascinating what Richard Dawkins has to say about DNA than you. But he was like, I kind of had the image in my mind, and it's like, pop, 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 letter of DNA, letter of DNA. It's like he was tripping or something. And I was like, bro, that is the least interesting view of DNA you can have. It's basically you've just smoked pot and you're divagating. And Richard Dawkins is right in front of you. The guy who has most to say about genes, the guy who understood it all in his days. Holy shit, that was an annoying interview. Microsoft allows blacklisted conservative sites back into advertising program. Microsoft has reversed the decision to add negative ad revenue flags for conservative media outlets, which were contained on a disinformation tracking group's blacklist. So I think we're seeing the relaxation here of the censorship system, which I had said with Elon at Twitter, it's going to influence other companies. It's a very shy advance here. It's not fascinating, and it's not going to change the world, but they're starting to loosen up on understanding, hey, is it logical that we've pursued basically a total abolishment on the public space of right-wing ideas of all kind, from center to right? It's not fair, it's nonsense, and even from a commercial perspective, it doesn't make sense. Speaker's Corner says, Jeff, I am keen to know what type of car you opted for to handle the extremist Canadian weather you are subjected to. Well, I did a show about it. I did a review of my new car, which was then a Mitsubishi Mirage. Mitsubishi Mirage is the cheapest car you can buy new in Canada. So I went for the cheapest car, the smallest car. It's light. It's so light that just bumping on a little bit of snow will just bend. It will bend the plastic sides of this toy car. But my God, do I love it that I have a car that costs so little and it's extremely fuel efficient. That's what I'm looking for in a car. Yes, the jailbreak of Dan, I've talked about it many, many times. Yeah. People are coming to the show and asking me, Jeff, have you talked about this? Well, yeah, I mean, we've had many shows exploring all these things with ChatGPT. Mikos has sent a super chat. He says, Jeff, it wouldn't hurt to pronounce Weinstein correctly. It rhymes with Einstein. Okay, Weinstein? That's how we pronounce it? Imagine if Brett continuously referred you to as John Grapey or some annoying distortion of your name. Obviously, it doesn't change any arguments, but it does show some basic respect. Well, I've always misunderstood what was the right way, because some people have tried teaching it to me, but I may have misunderstood in the wrong direction. I thought you guys had taught me to say Weinstein. You're telling me, should I say Weinstein? I can. I mean, you guys should maybe send me a recording on email. I'm totally in for saying it the right way, but I've Weinstein. That would be it. But you guys should send me a recording in email, because I've never known what was the right way in the end. Go away, says JF. Get a Toyota Land Cruiser. Your grandkids will be able to drive it one day. No way. I'm not buying these big things. Now, as far as respect that you mentioned, Brett doesn't respect me. Brett has been ignoring me, has been talking about me on his show without naming me for years, and has been mocking me for years. So you talk of respect. I don't mock Brett. I've been mocked on his show, not even by name. I remember one day that I had done a critique of one of Brett's ideas. I don't even remember what it was. And Brett told Heather on the show, so I've been taken to task by someone. And Heather said, someone who? And Brett said, didn't name my name. He just made a face. And Heather replied, oh, a biologist? But what she was referring to was the fact that I have biologist in my Twitter bio. Because this woman doesn't respect the fact that I'm a biologist, because I don't have a job in a university. Is that it, Heather? I have a theory right here that is totally fine to qualify me as a biologist. If anything, I may be more of a biologist than these two at this point, because I'm actively working on a second book that will present a theory of biology once again. So if you talk of respect and what they did last week was calling my crowd Nazis. Some of my crowd are Nazis. Listen, I'm much more respectful on my side than they are on their side. I have years of them mocking me and mistreating me publicly. Now, no one notices because I know that I have biologists in my Twitter and that Brett is talking about me because I've just said these things to Brett in DM. So I know that they're talking about me, but their crowd doesn't know. But there they are mocking me, you know, for more than a year now. Kuntzilla says, yeah, it always bothered me, especially when the IDW first formed and acted all edgy, then just go on ignoring all the important questions and people. Exactly. And this is basically a cartel, which a plagiarism accusation is the right tool to break a cartel. Here we have a man, Pathogenetics. He's been ignored by the cartel. So let's break the cartel. Let's put some pressure on them until they acknowledge Pathogenetics. Not that Pathogenetics is like an edgy guy. I don't know that he's anyhow political in any way. But he was ignored. So here's a standing example of someone legitimately contributing to their work, to their podcast, and they use these numbers, and he's not getting recognized. So let's start with Pathogenetics, and then the world, then open up the cartel even more. Kuntzilla says, fuck yeah, break the cartel, that's cool. Philosoraptor sends a super chat. He says, in Canada, if someone breaks into your home, what are you legally allowed to do to them? Bro. You might very well be sued for murder if you do anything. I mean, there are cases of the thief getting basically killed by his own actions, but they accuse the owner of the house to have been careless. And let's say the thief does something that ends up in his death. Now they accuse the owner of the house to have been neglectful and to have not made his house secure enough for the thief. That's just how bad it is. Give me 10 seconds, I'll be back. All right, I am back. How are things looking? A hitch slap on the side of the Twitter space.
Yeah, we're hearing you loud and clear. Nobody's put in any requests yet to speak. There was one gentleman earlier put in a request, but he had a very unsavory picture, so I didn't accept him. But other than that, everyone else has been
very
just smart listening.
So, yeah, because I don't want any trouble today.
Correct. He had a certain figure from history who I won't name. That's all I'll say.
All right. Mr. Russell says, they mocked me. Maybe you're just too sensitive. That being said, you may have better credential as a biologist than them, as far as I know. I mean, it's not important, the credentials. What's important is the mockery. It's the mockery and it's the disrespect. And that's why I insisted on my video today. I discovered a case of plagiarism in your work. The least you could do would be, if you do the correction that I suggest, to attribute it to me, to me also, you know, to say, this is the guy who pointed out this plagiarism. I think it's a fair request, minimal recognition of the work that I've done for free to improve Brett's method, because I've had to work to establish my links system. My links system make it such that any one of you send me information during the show and I talk about it, it automatically gets included into into the list that I produce at the end of the show and automatically uploaded to my server. This is an efficient way to manage proper attribution. Anything that you guys are sending me an article I've never seen, automatically I put it in my browser. It gets included in the list of quotations of the night. Blunderbuss has sent a super chat on entropy. $5. Thank you so much. He says, how and when did those Weinstein guys get into the public spotlight in the first place? Well, it was a mix of Eric Weinstein. I'm trying to use the new thing that you guys told me. Eric Weinstein was a man who organized the whole background thing of the IDW. He was basically the brain behind the whole idea of an IDW, which is an extremely ethnocentric, almost discriminatory network of intellectuals, basically. To present it as anything else than this, as basically a bunch of friends who are part of the same group, who feel part of the same group, and who defend very, very similar ideas, would be a misunderstanding of what the IDW is. I'm sure he was behind. Sometimes I'm wondering whether Eric Weinstein was the guy thinking it was a good idea to take pictures on floral moss in the forest. When I think of the IDW, I think of the stupid enchanted forest picture, and I'm like, did this idea stem in Eric Weinstein's head? That is a question I sometimes ask myself. Then Brett, of course, he rose to fame through appearances on Fox News and through all social media virality following his evergreen refusal to not be at the college that day because it was a no white person day, basically. Yeah, so that's how that's their initial positioning, and then it grew into internet presence for both of them in different ways. I've always asked myself, if I was in the position of Brett Weinstein at Evergreen, as a white man, as not a Jew, I've always asked myself, if I do what he does, do I end up being smeared as a Nazi? That's always been a question on my mind. If I cannot have the argument that, hey, I'm standing up to BLM in the college because as a Jew, I feel that, you know, I've been discriminated against, and I would like to stand here and say there's no place for me to be discriminated against for my race. I'm wondering if a white man does this. Well, I'm wondering. It's almost rhetorically that I say I'm wondering. It's almost a rhetorical question because I'm not wondering. We see every day what happens to white men who do this. A white man who stands and says, I'm not going to leave the campus on no white person day. I'm going to make a stand. They end up getting smeared. They end up getting called Nazis. They end up, it pieces are written about them. And they are fully cancelled. So I see that Nathaniel wants to speak. Maybe we can speak with him.
We have him here. Nathaniel, go ahead. Do you have a science question for JF or any comments that you want to make? Please go ahead. Just unmute yourself.
Sure. I just wanted to briefly provide my input with that theoretical question you asked about, would I have faced similar persecution to Mr. Weinstein had I made comments similar to his at the time? You would have faced far worse. In fact, the extent of Weinstein's criticism seems to have been that I shouldn't be mistaken for this group, this nebulous Aryan caucus, which has wronged you so terribly And, you know, as a result, right, like, no, I'm one of you. Please, please don't fire me. Don't take away my job. Don't malign me to the administration. And so that having been said, I mean, the extent to which people like Brett Weinstein are just openly hostile to our views and our way of life is, it really is remarkable. I have trouble wrapping my head around it. And I've been in this for quite some time. So I just wanted to provide my input in that respect.
Well, this is extremely appreciated because it's extremely well phrased what you say. And I agree with everything that was said. There is a kind of irrational hate happening here that we are the target of. It is clear to me. They lose their shit. This is what's happening. If I was to describe the situation, they are losing their fucking shit. And it's what we see in the mainstream media when they talk about Russia. It's what we see. It's what we see in so many categories. The political mainstream, the media, they go crazy on certain subjects. And COVID is highly triggering for them. Russia, Trump, highly triggering for them. And I feel that we have been targeted here by a similar form of irrationality. When Brett, instead of responding to my scholarly questions, calls my fans Nazis and thinks that somehow that's a good way to advance the case. Lodozal is on the regular chat. He says, Brett seems generally careful with attribution. If he doesn't respond further, it may be he thinks this is too small a case or that it's been disproven. Either case could explain the response on DH. I don't know what you mean by DH, but no, I don't think it's, I think it's never a small case, you know. We may be headed, in 5 years from now, it may be the mainstream theory that Omicron was a lab leak too, a second lab leak. If that was the case, the calculations of pathogenetics would have probably played a massive role in this conversion from the science and the genome of Omicron that we knew to converting the public. And people were asking me, JF, it's just data. Why do we have to cite data? There was a loving way in which this data was treated by pathogenetics, let me tell you. Because I've researched so much of what happened between November 30 and December 5 leading to the tweet of pathogenetics. And let me tell you, even I as a biologist, 99% of the tweets, they are cryptic to me. You know, it's like they're talking in codes. They're like, oh yeah, I found a 71 column 1, column 2. Oh my God, you found this? I found a 252. Hey, look at the position 1,300. It's like incomprehensible. These geeks were gathering data and studying Omicron, and pathogenetics comes on December 5th and puts a tweet that says, hey, bro, that is the difference between Omicron non-synonymous mutations and most other variants. It's 80 versus less than 1%. And that, to me, is educational work, intellectual work. It's a form of making the knowledge more digestible for society. And so my answer to anyone who says, Jeff, it's just data, why would it be cited? It was data that was treated for the purpose of making it more understandable. And when Brett, on a podcast that is meant to talk to the general public and the layman, when Brett uses these numbers, he's using a signature of love given treated mathematics and softened it and made it more appealing and more understandable. And that is intellectual work that deserves, in my view, the greatest respect and proper attribution. U.S. gasoline demand on the rise. That was my last news item for tonight. The gasoline demand in the U.S. rose by 1.7% last week and was also 3.7% higher than the four-week moving average, gas body reported as quoted by Reuters. So gas demand back to its middle level. interesting. We had lots of waves, a big inflation wave, and then it's been lower for a while. Naberius says the IDW presented themselves as free thinkers who valued and popularized steel manning, presenting the other side's argument better than they even could. But then they set boundaries and became an echo chamber of leftists with some right-wing sympathies. They couldn't live up to their own standards. Absolutely, absolutely. It's like, if you do the Sam Harris thing that he did in the moral landscape, you're not making any progression. Sam Harris in the moral landscape says, we have to care about harm and the well-being of conscious creature. And if you don't agree with this, you're a psychopath and we shouldn't talk to you. That is what Sam Harris does. So he basically defines the right outside of existence. And he's like, we shouldn't even engage with you. Well, then all of your care for proper work, non-fallacious arguments is worth nothing. Because if you ignore the other, if you don't care about the other, then you are cutting yourself away in a way that basically you have to spend zero fallacies to make the biggest one of them all, to ignore that something exists. Thomas O'Ward says, of course, Omicron and all of the rest are lab leaks. They are pushing extraterrestrial alien balloons and turning Ohio into a modern-day Chernobyl to distract from the Pfizer revelations. Please don't make the mistake of doubting this again, JF. That's a very networked interpretation. All of these things don't have to be linked to each other, so I disagree. Hitchslap, we are headed toward the conclusion of the show. Perhaps we could talk with Ruffman. What do you think?
Yes, Ruffman, if you have any questions for JF, now's your chance. Just unmute yourself and please go ahead if you like. Otherwise, we'll conclude.
JF?
Yes, JF? Ruffman.
Yes, I asked a question, a very important question.
Go ahead. Ruffman, please repeat your question. Ruffman, please repeat your question if you can. So, mind and no trolling. This is a serious show, but go ahead. What do you want to say?
Yeah, it's all serious. I asked a very important question to a woman 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
It was it was only the second time in my life that I asked the question. But I asked a woman for sex. And do you want me to tell you about this story or do you want me to just get to my question to you?
Well, get to the question. But, you know, give us just a quick look into what is your concern.
I want to give you an update of my woman, but yeah, my question relates to my experience with woman. I asked woman for sex for the second time in my life. It was actually the same woman, actually. So just to give you details about the exact situation. But yeah, well, I'll tell you how I asked woman out. I said to woman, do you remember when we first met? What did you say to me? And I said, you said, are you here to get laid? And then I said to her, nah, I'm not here to get laid. But then, yeah. So I said that to her. I repeated it. I said, hey, do you remember when we first met? Are you here to get laid? And then I said to her, well, when I say I can give you the best night of your life, you know, I'm not exaggerating. And then her response was, I believe that. Then I offered her a ride home. And then she said she would meet me at the dance club. And about 2 weeks later, or a month later, she didn't show up at the dance club. So I ask a very important question to you, JF. It's a question that I think is extremely important because I think it relates to the primary instruction that you give all the boys in the regular chat, which is to inseminate. And the question is, what is the best way or the best strategy to ask women for sexual intercourse?
Well, you need to have a woman who wants to be with you in a family. So the best way is to have good social status that will convince her that you are a worthy phenomenon, that you deserve to be reproduced.
Okay.
So the way you acquire this could be through money, could be through respect in your community, could be through your good comedy, but you have to find a way that you are desirable and she wants to have babies with you. Then the insemination part will be very easy. Nature is going to handle all of it.
Okay, well, I'm not rich. I don't have a lot of money. I actually had a very experience trying to acquire money similar to you. I went to a university. I realized that, you know, I basically had the same thought as you. I said, oh, I feel like they just give people jobs if you act like a leftist or if you have friends or family in high places. So once I realized that, I was like, okay, I've got to get out of here. So you know, I don't suck up to the leftist crowd. So I'm not in a great financial position. I don't want to go to a job interview and act like a, you know, do the whole act. So I'm trying to be an entrepreneur. But as I'm pretty outspoken, it's pretty hard to get a find work when you're pretty outspoken.
Yes. Well, you have to find something that you will be good at doing for the market and where it won't matter your social skills. But thank you so much for calling, Ruffman. Hitchslap, any words to say in conclusion?
Yes, great show, JF. I just had a question for myself. If it's beyond the scope of the amount of time that's left or whatever, that's fine. Just let me know. I was just doing some basic research on dominant genes versus recessive genes, kind of as it relates to eye color and just overall phenotype. And I was just wondering about the mechanism. Obviously, I understand what a recessive gene is, how it works in practice, but I'm not sure how exactly one gene is able to be dominant and one gene is able to be recessive. So that was my question, just around the mechanism. Why is it that brown eyes are more likely, are more dominant than blue eyes or something like that from a mechanistic point of view?
There's many possibilities. I guess there's an infinite number of possibilities. In principle, any gene and its two alleles could be interacting in any way they can. Now, to give you an example, suppose you have a characteristic that is having blue eyes, and then you have a characteristic that is having brown eyes. The problem is blue eyes is an absence of something. Blue eyes is simply what eyes look like when they don't produce melanin in the iris. And so you have a beginning of an explanation here in the fact that basically, brown eye comes to mess blue eyes. And so you don't need two versions of the allele. Most of the time, you will only have a handful of genes and they will lead to melanin being created and you don't need the two copies of them all. So why is it that we need two copies of the genes to have blue eyes but one copy of the gene to have brown eyes? Well, it's because blue eyes is an absence of melanin, and this absence must be complete. As soon as you have one, two, three genes in the pack that contribute to eye color, if just a little bit of them start producing melanin, you're done. Your eyes aren't blue anymore. So very often, this effect can occur by negative versus positive effect of a gene. But I'm sure there are many mechanisms and interactions and signaling pathways where it comes to be different. Philosoraptor sent a super chat. He says, hey, JF, how's Mama JF? We haven't seen her recently. Mama JF is around. She is very busy, so that's why she doesn't come often on the show. But life is keeping her busy, so everything is good. All right, it's Slap. It was a pleasure to see you today. And I think that will be it for tonight.
Absolutely. We have Nathaniel joining. He was requesting. I don't know if we have time to get a question
for
him.
Sure, Nathaniel. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had one more question for you, JF. It's a bit of a sensitive one, but I'll try to use correct language here. There is a certain, shall we say, tribal ethnic group.
Well, Nathaniel, there is no place for this by... It's like... Why are you guys constantly coming to mess my streams? Always, always fucking coming to mess my stream. I think I'm gonna start just banning, blocking everyone. Why? Why?
Thank you.